You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Real quick, get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube, like this episode, follow all the social media accounts, sign up for the free newsletter, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. That's commonfan.co. Also, as always, this episode brought to you by Oak Barn Beef. The holidays are here, Common Fans. It's Thanksgiving week. It's still Thanksgiving week that we're recording this. And Oak Barn Beef makes the perfect gift for clients, friends, and family. Their bundles are packed with Nebraska-raised, dry-aged beef, always a hit and way better than another gift basket. Go to oakbarnbeef.com to order and give a gift that's as genuine as your gratitude. Common Fans, we are recording this on Friday night right after the game. Given various family obligations and other things, we may not be able to get it out Saturday, but we're going to try to get out earlier than normal. So hopefully we put it out by Sunday morning at the very latest. Guys, there nothing is good.
Nothing is good. Everything is bad.
It's the day after Thanksgiving. Everything is, in fact, terrible, and we have nothing to be thankful for. Welcome to the latest episode of the Common Fan.
Yeah. Bring it in with holiday cheer.
This raw, fresh emotion. I'm so happy that we're getting this right now.
If you came here for some holiday cheer, day after Thanksgiving, a couple days after Thanksgiving, by the time you're listening, you're not going to find it here.
You're getting none of
this
it.
This is doom and gloom.
You're none of it.
This is doom and gloom. This is the dark side. This is the seedy underbelly of being a Husker fan is what we're doing right now.
That's right. So we're going to do corn cobs. That won't take very long because of this pathetic performance. But guys, here's the big picture. The thing I can't get out of my head. We have reached the point of until further notice with Matt Rhule and his staff. And what I mean by that is until further notice, they don't get the benefit of the doubt on anything.
No, not anymore.
We're not calling for his job. Nope. We've been big Rhule supporters. No, okay. And I think the last thing Nebraska needs is more instability and another coaching change. But until they have not earned the benefit of the doubt for lots of reasons.
I think we've earned the right to be critical.
We've earned the right to be critical. Right. All of the fan base with the investment that we make in this program, time, money, energy, all those things. We've earned the right to be critical. And, you know, for the second consecutive season, we started 5-1. And so for the back half, we're one win better. You know, we're 2-4 instead of 1-5. End of the season, 2-4 instead of 1-5. But there's so many questions that are raised by especially the last two games. Mm. More questions than answers, frankly, at this point. Yep. Guys. So we're going to get into all of that, Common Fans. Let's do corn cobs really quickly.
Lack thereof, TJ.
The corn cob segment is brought to you by the Nebraska Farm Bureau, the largest agricultural organization in the state with more than 56,000 members. For over a century, Farm Bureau has supported Nebraska's farm and ranch families, but their impact stretches far beyond the field. They grow leaders, amplify voices at the Capitol, and strengthen communities across our state. Agriculture is the backbone of Nebraska. When it thrives, we all thrive. Join Nebraska Farm Bureau today at nefb.org. That's nefb.org. Okay, guys, for the second game in a row, it's a little bit hard to come up with three guys to give corn cobs to. And so we're not going to do that. We talked about it beforehand before we hit record. And look, I mean, I want to get there's a lot of guys out there playing their hearts out.
Yeah.
They're playing as hard as they can. Like, this is not, sure. And I think some of our frustrations are with coaching staff. Some of it is with, various things, but, that just the effort was bad. The game was ugly. Yeah. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. If you're a Nebraska Cornhusker, you can say that's not good enough. Except once again, for the one and only Emmett Johnson.
Yeah.
Incredible performance by Emmett. I love the man. I love him.
He deserved more.
Like a family member.
You're invited to Thanksgiving next year at TJ's.
It's hard. Like
open seat at my family.
Honestly, it's hard not to sort of have these creeping feelings the same day as this game of how we kind of wasted a manageable schedule and wasted this performance by Emmett, which this season
is now
better than Amir in 2014. The best running back performance by a Nebraska running back in at least a decade and maybe much longer than that.
Yeah.
I agree.
And he deserves all the credit in the world. He gets the one and only corn cob. He gets all three corn cobs, however you want to slice
it. All three of them.
He gets all three corn cobs. And I just, you know, they showed the clip on Twitter. Somebody posted it. He was in tears on the field after the game, a lot of emotion.
He gone.
It's hard to think he's coming back. It's hard to think he's coming back.
I'd love to have him back. I'd love to have him back. But I think, I think the smart move for him is if he can go now and he has a good projection for the draft,
I mean, we've talked about how they, guys can make money in college now. Maybe that's a game changer. Maybe that's a difference maker. But the flip side of that is, a lot of guys don't make it to age 30 in the NFL. A 6-year career is considered a pretty good career in the NFL.
Especially as a running back.
Yeah, exactly, Jeff. Especially at running back. The shelf life is short.
Yeah. And shorter than it used to be, I feel like. And so it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to make, life-changing money. We'll see. We'll see what happens
then. We'll see. I mean, he comes back and he's for sure a top 10 Heisman candidate right off the bat, just with his production. So,
And maybe he can be sold on, make yourself a first round pick or a top 15 pick, or maybe he can be sold. And in the meantime, make $2 million or something.
Make millions more, Emmett. You come back, Emmett, have another season like this or even better, maybe.
No, you're listening, Emmett. We know.
Millions more. Millions more.
Listen to
endorsements.
Listen to Uncle Matty O here. Listen to Uncle.
Endorsements, women, fast cars.
Whoa.
All of it. Come on. Rule's a hell of a salesman. He can sell them, sure. He can sell them for sure, right? Like Rule's been selling us for 3 years.
Matty O's voice is a little raw from being at the game, raw. And there's I love it.
There's a little bit of a virus that I'm on the backside of. Plus,
you were in house.
Braving the conditions today.
Yeah.
So I sound like Mickey Rourke after a 3-day bender.
All right. Here's the deal, guys. I want to talk some big picture stuff for real here. Cause I listened to our Wednesday episode, which was a lot of fun, by the way. Just talking about how we are and always will be superior to Iowa. And I still believe that, current realities notwithstanding. I want to get to some big picture stuff. But let's talk about the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, I want to talk about a few things. We're not going to do the blow by blow. We're not going to do the play by play or the drive by drive because what's the point? Mm-hmm. But I want to say a few things, guys. So first of all, forgive me if this is all over the map.
Yeah.
First of all, we win the toss and we take the ball, and I have no idea why we did that. Like, that is Kirk Ferentz playing into his hands. That's exactly what he wants us to do. One could argue it didn't really matter because we still scored the first, and it was a touchdown, not a field goal. So we scored first, and we held them. We forced two punts to start the second half. So maybe it didn't end up mattering, but I hated that.
Yeah.
But then when the game started, their Iowa's first possession, they had what was amounted to a catch for first down. And I think it was it Donovan Jones? Donovan Jones got in there, or Rex Guthrie, one of those two. I think it was Jones. Broke it up, didn't possess it long enough for it to count because he caught the ball and both feet like hit the ground. I was like, I wonder if they're going to like review that or something. Called it incomplete on the field. Nobody challenged it. And I was like, okay, maybe this is our day.
Yeah.
And then Emmett had his long run, almost got in the end zone, on the next play. Touchdown, Nebraska's up 7-0. And it's like, okay, here we go. Like, maybe this is just going to be a day where everything comes together for us. A little bit later, I'm trying to remember what the score was when we kicked off and we got, like, the ball landed in no man's land in front of Wheatgen, and we somehow recovered it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was incredible. And I think, was it?
Well, tied at the time, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was tied.
Or was it? Yeah.
Eckler was going crazy, too. That was pretty cool. That was the highlight of the game for me.
That was incredible. That was incredible. So that's what it was. We kicked a field goal to tie it at 10-10. And then got
the ball
and kickoff
the lead.
Muffed by Iowa. I love the ESPN play-by-play says muffed by Iowa. Recovered by Nebraska. So it was 10-10. So that's the other thing. Like, we went up 7-0. Then we gave up 10 points. Then we find our way back to tie it. Then we get the ball again. And it was like, okay, right? And we got points on there to make it 13-10. So there were some things early that I thought, maybe, first of all, like, maybe this is just going to be a shootout and it's going to be like 35-32 or something.
That's what it usually is, yeah.
Right?
Well, not that high score,
not that many points,
usually
though,
close,
Yeah, right. But second of all, it's just like, it feels like we're getting some breaks today, like maybe, just maybe. But there were just as many things that were like, you can't do too many of those things. Quinn Clark, so TJ Latif, several of his, in the second half, he had some ball sale on him. We come to find out he's playing with a pulled hamstring. You know, Latif didn't look great, but he's playing with a pulled hamstring. Like, right, if anybody's ever dealt with that, that's very painful. Like, you're not going to be, they're not going to, they clearly, so they couldn't run him. And you could see he was limping out there.
And that sucks, and man. And that's
trying to put, throw off of that. Yeah.
Go ahead. To state the obvious, like, that just eliminates, like, the whole point of having him on the field is that threat of the run. And when you take that out of the equation, we're in big trouble. And it's shook.
But like, Latif's had several throws in the first quarter that were like perfect.
They were there.
There was one that went off.
Clark should have been a touchdown.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Quinn Clark should have been a touchdown. He mistimed his jump, right? So we only got a field goal on that one. There was another one that like went off Dane Key's hands. The announcer, like, that one, I think was a stretch to say he should have caught it because it was a reach.
Yeah.
But my takeaway from that one was like, that's about the only place you can put that ball because he was well guarded. So there were some, my point is there were several throws that TJ had that were like, okay, that's a pretty good throw, but it was in a completion.
Yeah.
But the Quinn Clark one is one example. Obviously the big one, which we're about to get to, is the fumble and that led to a safety on the punt.
That was the game. That was the game, in my opinion.
There were several like little things, the hands to the face penalty, like that was like absolutely killer, worst possible moment. There were just several little things that
Barney making that return, right? And then getting the, who was that? That guy, was it Mangini? Somebody that was throwing.
Oh yeah. Barney got like, yes. And then getting that penalty.
Penalties like that are just killing us. Yeah.
And it was like, it was one thought I had was it's the most Nebraska thing ever that special teams was finally completely flipped for the year. And we've gone from one of the worst in the country to one of the best for the country. And then that unit falls on its face against Iowa. And we absolutely need to be perfect in every phase. Like, that's just the most, it's really nobody's fault. Mike, I'm not going to blame Mike Eckler for anything this season.
Hell no.
But like, that's the most Nebraska thing ever. Of course that happens to Nebraska, you know?
Sure.
Right.
So I want to talk about the real quick. We're still talking about the game. I want to talk about the three things, three plays that I think impacted it more than anything else.
I know
the biggest and the biggest and most obvious one is the Barney's fumble. It should have been a targeting call.
Yeah.
I want to be clear on that.
For sure.
The announcer said it was targeting.
Yep.
The rules guy said, Gene Saratori, is that it?
Yep.
Yeah. The rules guy said it was targeting. He said he was surprised after the fact that it wasn't targeting. Like, it should have been.
Which is inexplicable to me. I do not get it. I'm not going to make a CFIC joke, but there is no doubt question in mind. Like, I don't, there's no other explanation that refs hate us by not calling that. I don't get it. Like, there is no explanation for that, right? Like, so how can everybody in the stadium, every viewer on that's watching on TV, every announcer, the rules analyst, Everybody thinks it's a targeting call, except for those dudes on the field. It makes zero sense.
Yeah. No, every fan base thinks that the refs hate their team, right? Yeah. But like, I feel like we have a serious gripe. Like,
a case to be made.
It just feels like every single time, every single game we play, that we're getting hosed on calls. It just feels that way.
Yeah.
You know, when you've got the rules analyst saying it's targeting and the announcer saying it's targeting, the whole stadium thinks it's targeting and they don't, like, what are the ramifications for these refs?
Right.
Nothing. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
You make terrible calls that a lot of them influence the game.
Yeah,
for sure.
You know?
Agreed.
And there's no consequences for these refs, or usually there's not.
Yeah. But here's what I would say, and love Jacory, and I thought he played a pretty good game today overall. But like, hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
And he got hit really hard.
Well, so he fumbled before that.
Because of the penalty.
And I thought I was fine with them with rules having them re-kick it, because we could have just declined it and taken the ball.
Well, would have been out at like the 5-yard line?
But here's the thing too. Was he not down? Like, I thought he was down.
No, excuse me, he was down.
And then they still marked it at like the 3, but then the penalty happened.
I think upon review, he would have been at the 10, which is about where he went down. Wasn't that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
No question.
Another thing that would happen, the first punt was like 40 yards. The second one was over 50. So of course they get pushed back and the guy kicks it further. But the fact is, if he doesn't fumble, then we're just talking about
it's 24-16.
24-16. We don't give the ball right back to Iowa. And we're just frustrated about a targeting no call, but we have the ball and it's potentially a totally different game, especially if we go down again.
Yes. Yep. Yes. But also we still held him. Like, they get the ball to start the second half. They go 5 plays, 65 yards, you hold, and they punt. Then they get the safety. They go 3 and out.
Yeah.
And we get the ball back, and what do we do? Three plays, six yards.
Yeah, that's okay. That's my next two. That's going to get to my next two gripes about the
way. Set you up perfectly.
What turned this game? You did. Does anybody have anything else to say about that series? The safety speaks for itself.
Yeah.
Here's my second gripe. It's two different plays, and they were both on 2nd and 4.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know where you're going there.
Okay.
And they're giving you confetti for that.
Give me confetti. I don't want
confetti
for that. One was late first half, late second quarter. The other one was immediately after this punt situation. So I want to get to both of them. So this, to me, guys, this, I'm not joking. This is the little stuff that, like, people don't think about. After the game, because it's 40-16, it's like, oh, Nebraska got smoked. If both Nebraska manages this stuff differently and we don't fumble it out of the end zone, it's potentially an entirely different game. I think Iowa is the better team. Okay. Iowa is the better team on the field today.
Sure.
They've been the better program than us for the last decade. Like, we have to admit that. But the way you coach this game matters. And the way you play this game matters. And it could have gone totally differently. Here's my first biggest, this might be a bigger gripe than the fumble and safety on special teams even. Okay.
Yep.
We kick a field goal to make it 17-16. And I was glad every time Rule took the points and the field goals, I was glad in this game. Take the points against Iowa. Keep it close. So whatever. It's 17-16. I'm getting ahead of myself. We're down 17-13. I was not glad when he took the points here, and I'll tell you why. So I'm going to totally contradict myself, but here's what I'm
going to all over the place, folks.
I know. I'm sorry.
Pissed.
Manic.
He's pissed.
We have it 1st and 10 at the Iowa 24. Okay. After a 6-yard run by Emmett. Let me say this too. Let me say one more thing to set this up. Not only has Emmett been a shining star all season, but especially the last, what'd they say, 5 games in a row with at least 100 yards.
Our best player by far.
We have to give credit where it's due. The offensive line, which we beat up on for more than half the season,
hey, good job,
has been blocking very, like, he has had lots of room to run in just about every game. I was shocked at how well we were running. And that's not a knock on Emmett, just because I thought he wouldn't have a lot of room to run, because it's always hard to run on Iowa.
Yeah.
No back runs for 200 yards on Iowa. Nobody does that. So the point is, Emmett rarely lost yards, and he rarely got fewer than 4 yards. I mean, he was, if they had given to him 50 times that game, I would not have had a problem with that.
Right.
And especially knowing Latif's condition now, like, so it's first and 10 at the Iowa 18. And Emmett gets a, what do you know? Emmett rushes for 6 yards to the Iowa. Oh my God, guys, I'm sorry. I'm all over the map here. First and 10 of the Iowa 24. Sorry. Runs for 6 yards to get to the 18. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it's 2nd and 4, and Latif throws incomplete to Dane Key. It's like the one-on-one fade, 50-50 ball.
I said it during the game. I go, TJ is going to hate this play.
You did. You did.
I said it to my family. TJ is going to hate this play.
So, and then we did a 1 yard run on 3rd and 4. So it's 4th and 3. We kicked the field goal. At 4th and 3, I didn't want us to go for it. Don't get me wrong. But here's what I hate about this, guys. There's multiple things I hate about this. We end up kicking the field goal with 2:53 left to go. It's 2nd and 4. Okay, let's go back to 2nd and 4. At 2nd and 4 on the 18 yard line, the way Emmett had been running, the way the offensive line had been blocking, I feel supremely confident we could have gotten 4 yards in 2 plays.
Yeah.
Right, second down, running on 2nd down, running on 3rd down. I feel supremely confident we could have gotten 2 yards. So that gives you a fresh set of downs at the 14 yard line, or maybe beyond, maybe it's 1st and goal at that point, depending on how much you get. But so much more important than that is that allows you to run minutes more off the clock.
More clock.
Sure. Way more clock.
Yeah.
So even if you end up settling for a field goal, you do it with, I don't know, a minute left.
A minute left.
30 seconds left in the half, a minute 30, whatever it was, you run another minute or two off the clock and make it way harder for Iowa to go down and score. Because, and as we saw on the 3rd and 4, Emmett ran for 1 yard, and then Rule let the clock run all the way down and called timeout before kicking the field goal. And it was like, if running clock was this important to you, why did we throw it up on 2nd down with an injured quarterback who's a backup anyway in his 3rd start, mm-hmm. when that play hasn't worked well with Dylan or TJ all season?
Period. Long. Period.
At all.
Yes.
Maybe it's worked once or twice, but that's it. But more than anything else, you should be saying, we're already in field goal range. We're at least going to get 3 here. We're going to try to get 6. But what we want more than anything is not to give them time to go down and score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We give them 2:53. That's enough for any team in America in any age group in 2025. You know, it used to be 2:53. You'd think, oh, they don't have time to score, because just the way the game was played, I feel like when we were growing up, it was just different. 2:53 is plenty of time for anybody to go down and score.
And even Iowa,
the way our defense was playing, and sure, they go down and score to make it 24-16. There's a huge difference of 17-16 before half, or even 20-16 before half. Maybe they have enough time to get in field goal range versus 24-16. That matters a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it says to me still, this goes back to game management. This goes back to complimentary. Like, I feel like when we say complimentary football, people think like, oh, that's Iowa, that's boring, whatever. No, it just means the defense putting the offense in the best position to succeed, and the offense putting the defense in the best position
to
succeed.
Point.
And the special teams, you know, supporting that effort, right? And so that's terrible complimentary football. And to me, it comes like Holgerson's going to Holgerson. OCs are going to OC. We know this lesson well enough now. Big-brained offensive coordinators can't be helped. They can't help themselves.
They can't.
Right.
They need to be told, this is over everything else, this is how we're going to play this, especially against Iowa.
Yeah.
So
who,
I guess
who excels at game management,
so
clock management, all those things. Go ahead, John.
Within a game like that, like, I guess I have a question, and maybe you two would know better than I would, but so you got analytics people that you know, get in your ear during a game and say, hey, you go for it here, or you kick the field goal, and the probabilities of converting a 1st down on 4th or kicking a field goal, blah, 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 blah. And so a lot of people go by the numbers. Is there anybody that gets in an offensive coordinator's ear and says, hey, you need to run the ball with Emmett Johnson 2 plays in a row here, then rather than pass it, because the numbers show it's going to work out better this way than throwing the ball. Does the head coach do that? Or is there somebody up in that booth?
I don't even think that. Analytics are a big part of the game now. I don't even think in that situation it requires much in the way of analytics.
No.
It requires you to look at the clock.
I think the common fans understand it. Dana Holgerson should freaking understand it.
Yeah. Hey, Dana, on this one, Let's keep it on the ground with Emmett. I want to run as much clock as possible. Even yeah. And let's say this, let's go one step further and say, even if they don't convert it, they run it twice in a row, like I just said, and they don't get it for some reason, at least run it. And you've taken another 45 seconds to a minute off the clock.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Right.
Yeah.
Let the play clock run down on each of those. Actually, it's going to be more like a minute and a half or 2 minutes. Let the play clock run down on each of them. Line up, pile up, then do it all over again. Line up, pile up, then let the play clock run all the way down before you kick your field goal. Worst case scenario, you could have taken another minute to minute and a half off. I'm not doing the math in my head at the moment, but that drives me absolutely nuts. And no, especially knowing that we're kicking the ball off to them to start the second half.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. So then one more example, and then I feel like I've been talking too much. I'll shut up.
I love it, TJ. Keep going, man. You're getting me riled up here. I'm very shucked this laptop against the wall right now.
So then, like, Iowa's possessions in the first half, they punted. We forced a punt of three and out on the first drive on their first possession. Then they went field goal, touchdown, 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 right? So yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
I'm just you're pivoting to the second half, right?
Yeah.
So the only thing did you guys have a problem with the end of the first half and how that was handled? Like, what the hell was going on there when Latif, like even Ross Tucker was saying during the broadcast, like, if you're gonna take a knee, why did Latif unnecessarily take that hit at the end? Like, he got rocked before we took a knee.
I did have a problem with that.
What is going on with Matt Rhule, and they said in our text thread too, a bunch of our buddies, like, why are we having these weird, odd ends to halves where the play calling is just weird and inexplicable?
That's what it was, Jeff. I'm glad you thought of that. So we got the ball at 32 seconds. And I honestly, at that point, if we had just taken a knee, I wouldn't have been super pissed off about it. That was the one, wasn't that the one where it was actually a great throw by Latif into Iowa territory and Dane Key didn't hold on to it?
Yes, again. And we were
that was that one.
Catch the ball, dude. We have you're a weapon. Catch
another great throw. So then it was like, then it was a 5-yard run to Emmett. And it was like, okay, like, they were just gonna run the clock here. And then they ran another play where Latif dropped back and got drilled.
Absolutely obliterated. Yeah.
Drilled, and it could have been a fumble, it could have been a pick.
Yes, he almost dropped it. Like, I was like, oh my God.
The announcer's like, yeah.
And the way these things
He had to hold it for 3 seconds before kneeling. Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, I'm just saying that I don't know. Why is this such an issue? Is that a Matt Rhule thing? Is that an OC thing? Like, these endings of halves are just confusing when it comes to play calling. Clock management has been a big freaking issue too. And if you were going to, you know how it's worked out. It happened last year or the year before when we fumble to give Iowa the ball. And then they kick a field goal to either win the game or get them more points. And, like, I just don't understand why the hell we're putting ourselves in situations like that to close out the half when you just kneel it out, call it good, get your head right, start a new second half. It's maddening.
I think, but if they do, like, some occasionally, I'm sure if they do that and they say, we're going to take a knee, or they just run the ball and take it into half, like, a lot of us would be like, there's 32 seconds left. Why aren't you at least trying to get in the field goal range? Why aren't you being more aggressive? Some of this stuff, they can't win. Yeah. And honestly, like, I appreciate the blow by blow and breaking down. Like, this game was closer than the score indicated, at least for two and a half quarters it was.
Yeah, it was a good run.
Like, the bottom line is, right now, Iowa has better coaches and better players than we do.
Yeah,
that's what I took out of this.
Yeah,
and it hurts to say that because I feel like we've been as talented. Here's big picture. This is big picture. We should never lose. Never lose. We should have a 70-80% win percentage against Iowa and Minnesota. Yeah. I can live with losing to the USCs and the Michigans of the world. They're probably going to be more talented and have more Jimmys and Joes than us.
If we could also beat them occasionally.
Yeah. That would be nice. I'm not saying we'll lose them every time. But we should have a winning record over a 10-year span versus the Iowas and Minnesotas of the world.
Yes.
That is just a fact. What I saw today, there are all these little plays that were we could have won that game if all these little things went our way. But what I still see is our D-line getting pushed around.
easily. Mm-hmm. Yes.
When Iowa wanted to push us around, they pushed us around. That is embarrassing as a Nebraska football fan and somebody that is proud of the black shirts, right? And the D line, and we're tougher than everybody else. It's not that anymore.
Yep.
Like it was, like it felt like we were getting back to that the last 2 years, but it maybe, you know, we've talked about it. Maybe it's more because of the guys, you know, the Ty Robinsons and Polar Bears and John Bullocks that apparently were incredible run-stopping defenders because it's gone this year. Like we've talked about it ad nauseum. Like the run D is not fixable during the season.
Not good.
Right? They better fix that damn thing this offseason.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's players or scheme, but everything needs to be looked at. The coaches are not doing a good enough job with the guys that they've got. Do they need better guys or do we need better coaches? Or do we need both? If we need both, then we're in bigger trouble than we thought. But something's got to be fixed and tweaked.
Yeah, 100%. And again, well, you're talking about defensive line, but the reason we lost this game, and I would go back to our last episode, was identity. Iowa knows what they're doing. They do it to perfection. We said it all day. Like, we can't play in Ferentz's hands of field position and grinding us to a pulp with the running game. And they have their identity, and us, we're like schizophrenic. We're bipolar. We have a running game identity for a good chunk of the first half, but then all of a sudden it's like
the passing offensive coordinator with an offensive coordinator who likes to pass more than run.
And then we flip the switch, and all of a sudden we're a fade pass to the end zone throwing offense, like out of nowhere. Like the thought process behind all of these things, I don't think we know what the hell we are. I know we don't know what the hell we are. And that's the difference between a win and a loss and a close game and a blowout.
But they've also got 20 some years more of a head coach.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you don't have your identity developed by now and you've been at a coach at a place for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Like, well, so, okay. You got these points are spot on, boys. And I want to stick with this big picture stuff. Let me finish with my final gripe because it plays into exactly what you're both talking about though. So to start the second half, because they punted it the first possession. Then their next possessions in the first half, they went field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Right. So coming out of the half, I'm like, if they score, we have to kick off. If they score a touchdown, this game's over. We kick off, we force a punt. That was the Ja'Cory Barney fiasco, the fumble safety. So then not only do we go down 10, we were down 8, then we go down 10. We have to give them the ball back. We force a stop again. So there wasn't a lot of bright spots with the defense, but they had just been on the field for like the first half of the third quarter. They had done their job. What we need more than anything at this moment is to give them a rest. First of all, take some time off the clock, even though we're down 10, and points. We desperately need points. And this was the other second and four that drove me nuts.
Oh God!
After their second punt, we're down 26-16, but there's 9:14 left in the third, guys.
End point
there
game.
Plenty of time. There is plenty of time, especially if we go score. First play of the drive, 6-yard run by Emmett Johnson.
Automatic.
And then we went incompletion.
Yep.
There's that schizophrenic bipolar identity right there.
Yep.
And then we
punted it. They score a touchdown to make it 33-16.
Damn.
And we were into the fourth quarter not long after that. And it was just like, we're not coming out from this. And then also like just insult to injury. We're down. I think it was already 40. Was it already 40-16 when Harburg fumbled at the goal line? I think it was. We're down 40-16. And I said out loud, because Nebraska's driving, even though if I could have one more complaint, they're just taking their time and huddling up. We're like halfway through the fourth quarter. We're down 24 points. Mm-hmm. We're down 24 points. They're just taking their time and huddling up. Whatever.
Yeah.
First and goal, or first, you know, whatever it was, and goal. And are we going to hand it to Emmett? No, we're not going to hand it to Emmett. We're going to have Harburg try and score. And we love Heinrich Harburg on this program, but he fumbles. And then, but I said on that drive, I was like, maybe something crazy will happen. Maybe we'll score.
Something crazy did happen.
I didn't even mean win. I just thought maybe we'll score, get the 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
Get some sort of stop or turnover. score again, get the 2-point conversion, and maybe it'll be four. We'll be down 8 late, and maybe just maybe we'll be hoping for something crazy, you know. Like, but instead we fumble, give them the ball back, and never get the ball back, and lose in humiliating fashion.
And poor Harburg, by the way. Like, I just, that dude, he didn't have a good showing today. I mean, that fumble in the end zone.
Well,
and that first down conversion that he got. I mean, that was as close as you get.
I don't know if he did get it. Yeah.
I don't know if he did either. And he got destroyed.
And we've been begging for them to do something different out of that. And they finally run him like on a naked bootleg and he barely gets the first down. And then they get down to like the goal line and he fumbles into the end zone.
Right.
Like, come on.
Rough day for William.
It is. Like I've been wanting to see that. And then it happens. It's like, oh God.
Yeah. So, okay. Back to big picture, guys. I mean, judging by Twitter, I talked to a friend, Charlie Colon, friend of the program,
Charlie
donated all the Chick-fil-A for our tailgate, and he's been on the show a couple times, and he was saying the post game call in shows were pretty ugly, which is not surprising.
I'm sure.
I think Husker Nation is pissed off, and everybody has every right to be.
They deserve to be,
and it comes back to the thing that we talked about after the Penn State game, which was, all right, Troy Dannon, you want to say this is year 3 of the rebuild and these kinds of things are going to happen, which he said after Minnesota, let me be clear. It is not too much to ask for us to show up every single game. Yeah. It is not too much to ask. It is not so much too much to ask for us to be competitive with Iowa. Okay, look, Iowa's a few plays away from being 10-2. They are. Almost beat Indiana. They almost beat Oregon. They're a pretty good team. This is better than Iowa last year and the year before. It's better than the last few Iowa teams. But it's not like none of this is acceptable in year 3. And Husker fans have every right to be pissed off. And I find myself thinking like everything needs to be on the table. And that might be reevaluating your defensive coordinator. That might be reevaluating what you're doing on offense. And honestly, like we've made jokes about Dana. We love his sort of riverboat gambler personality. But either it's like,
but is it a fit for here?
Exactly.
Like, I love Dana.
Good.
I love Dana. Exactly. But is he a fit for Nebraska and for Nebraska in the Big Ten?
No,
I don't know. Probably not.
I think it was, we had bye week after UCLA. Is that right? Yeah. I think it was sometime during the bye week. I listened to the Pick 6 podcast, which is the Omaha World Herald guys. So it's usually some combination of Sam McEwen, Tom Chattel, and Evan Bland. But I think Tom and Evan were out. So and Sam had Dirk Chatelain on with him.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
And Dirk's polarizing. He can be pretty negative and critical, and so some fans don't like that. But I always find him to be pretty analytical and makes,
I like Dirk.
The point that Dirk made at the time was about Nebraska's schedule and Dylan's stats that he had put up and sort of like 5-star quarterback, manageable schedule, year 3 of Matt Rule. And Dirk's point was, I think they're going to look back and say this was a huge missed opportunity. And his point was, yeah, the defensive has taken a step back. That's to be expected with some of their losses, but they've done enough. The offense has been we made that point too. The offense has been what's been a disappointment. Now, post Penn State and Iowa, it's all been disappointing.
Right.
But I think they need to rethink, like, let's go to the deep, like, so Holgorsen, that's one thing. System on offense, offensive coordinator, yes, offensive line coach, wide receivers coach, everybody. Like, are our wide receivers not getting open or our quarterbacks not hitting them? Either way, it feels like a coaching failure, right?
Yeah.
O-line has improved as the year has gone on, but what we saw the first 6 or 7 or 8 games was really not good.
Yeah.
So maybe some of that comes back to, because we've seen now that they're committing to the run more, it's been pretty good for the O-line. So maybe that's a simple identity thing. And then on the defense, I think I texted the guys this, our group of guys during the game. What good is a top five nationally passing defense if you can't stop the run?
Yeah.
And then you also can't really stop the pass against good teams when you really need to. And we never, ever, ever get to the quarterback. I mean, when was the last time we got to the quarterback consistently? Was it Randy Gregory?
Yeah, maybe.
Probably.
I mean, we had opportunities today, but we just couldn't get a sack out of it. We tried. We tried hard.
Individual stats don't always tell like a real picture, but if you're leading sack guy, your leader in sacks has 2.5 on the season, your defense isn't very good. I'm sorry.
Right.
Like your pass defense is great. Do you get to the quarterback? No. Okay. How good is your pass defense then? I mean, what does that matter? What does it matter if your DBs are knocking down balls? I mean,
they're not always.
They have the last two games. The pass defense hasn't even been good.
No,
the guys are running wide open.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Like wide open.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think the good. I mean, I was trying. Okay, so after the game, it was only about 12:30 my time. So I did a couple things. I went on a walk. I read several. I said I laid in bed. We weren't napping or anything. We were just laying in Charlotte's
room. Read some inspirational quotes.
No, I laid in Charlotte's room and we read
Doom scrolled
Pinkalicious stories.
Oh, okay.
Nice. I tried to have some perspective after this game.
Yeah.
And I tried like, cause everyone's furious. And so like, let's step back a little bit. You know, Riley went 5-7, 9-3, 4-8. It never felt like we had any sort of traction or momentum with Riley, save for...
Glad you brought this up, by the way.
I know where you're going to go, and you should. Yeah. Save for that 7-0 start in 2016, but that was a little bit of a paper tiger.
Yeah.
Frost was, again, inexplicably terrible. So, like, Rule, it's a little bit unfair to compare Rule to Solich or Pelini because they were taken over at different points in the program's history. And we went 5-7, 6-6, now 7-5. So technically there's been improvement, right? I also, again, I don't think any sort of like, you want to fire assistants. I don't really care. And the transfer portal is a transfer portal. Guys leave, guys come and go. I don't really care anymore. That includes every single guy on the roster. There's some guys I really don't want to see go, but guys are going to leave whether we want them to or not. I've become just unattached to players because guys are going to do their thing whether we want them to or not. Right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so you got to be a little bit unemotional about all that stuff. I don't think we need a head coaching change. I don't think very many people are calling for that.
No.
I think the seat is at least a little bit warm though. And I think it's fair to question like everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like, you could make an argument that in season one, they should have won at least one, maybe two more games. You could make an argument in season two, they should have won. Like, there are several wins that we've left out there.
Yeah.
And those come back to, okay. You want to tell me a culture is established? Rule likes to say, plant trees you'll never see grow, or whatever the hell that quote was, which means the older guys who committed to the program and the culture, they'll be, you know, they'll get credit when we're winning championships down the road.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, whatever. Like, great, sure. but if you want to say I haven't seen any proof that we're going to get there.
No.
It's easier to say we haven't seen any proof that this thing's going to get over the hump than it is to say, well, I think we might win 9 games next year, right? Especially with the schedule next year.
It's just so fragile. Yeah. We're still so fragile. Like one thing can happen, one bad thing can happen, and it's still that, here we go again.
Yeah, I thought we were over that too. You know what I mean? I thought that was a Frost era thing.
We haven't gotten over it. We haven't gotten over it. Like one bad thing happens, and then maybe we do something, you know, something good happens, and then another bad thing happens. Oh, two bad things have happened now. Oh, mm-hmm. No. Like, we're not good enough yet. to overcome those little things.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I even said this to Maddie Jr. walking out of the stadium. Like, I don't know if, and I just lost my damn train of thought, guys.
I don't know. You're emotional, Matt. I can tell.
I do that all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time. I will say this.
Geoff, go ahead. Yeah.
I'll let you.
I'll remember it. I'll find it.
Gather your thoughts. The only thing that I can really take away, and you said technically, yes, the season was quote unquote progress. After thinking about it after the game, I feel like that we might have taken a step back. I know on paper the numbers say that this season record wise is better than last season, but the schedule. We squandered the season that we were supposed to have. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to, unless we make leaps and bounds changes in the off season, our schedule next year is so much harder than this year.
Yeah.
How do you, like, I guess as a fan, how do you have hope knowing that we had it laid out this year for us to have a good run?
Yep.
The schedule lined up and we just completely botched the whole thing. Just from a strength of schedule standpoint, I feel like this season might be worse than last season.
We don't know yet what, like,
through the bowl game.
The schedule looks tough next year, but things change so fast.
You're right.
Like, yeah. You know, we could get into the season next year and like, oh, this team's not as good as we thought. Oh, this team lost their quarterback. Things happen.
Yeah. Doesn't matter this year, though.
But the point about this year is a solid one, Jeff.
I think it is a huge missed opportunity.
Wins against a bad Michigan State team, a bad Maryland team, an average, you know, Northwestern's always well coached, but they're average. They have average talent, you know?
I want to talk about Dylan. Like, I think we need to try to keep him. Like, I know we don't know our identity. We also don't know what else is out there. Like, if Dylan leaves, I like Latif. I think he's going to be a good player, but I think he needs a little more seasoning, a little more time. Yeah. Then we got to find a quarterback.
Yeah. But I think you can find quarterbacks now, man. The world is just so much different in college football that you can find quarterbacks a lot easier now. I get it. I don't want to speak ill of Dylan because I know that's blasphemy, but a five star is it's a rating. It's a number. And lots of five-star quarterbacks just don't work out.
Yeah, but don't you think, like, we keep Dylan doesn't get hurt, we probably beat USC. And then who knows what happens the rest of the way.
Yeah. A lot of what-ifs. I get it.
Former Husker Wyatt Mazur tweeted, very curious what the past two games would have looked like if Dylan was healthy. People do not understand how good Dylan is, even with some of the struggles the offense has had this year. So that's interesting.
Whose kids are being loud?
All right, go ahead. So talk amongst yourselves.
No, I think it's a very valid point. Like, if we could have somehow been able to have the same running game with Emmett that we've had since Dylan's been out, and then but also have Dylan perform and make those throws that TJ couldn't make,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, we could have used some throws today.
Yeah.
We could have used the poise and the experience. We could have used a lot of those things that Dylan has a slight edge over Latif.
Yeah.
All right. We could have used those things.
Here's what I think. Back to your point about it being so fragile, Matteo, is like, I want a program that plays excellent defense no matter what. And I want a program that's going to be competitive even when you lose your starting quarterback. And I want a program that's going to beat a team they're not supposed to beat sometimes. And we haven't had that since Pelini, probably.
But don't you feel like the first two seasons of Matt Rhule kind of had you believing a little bit that we were starting to build something that we were tough on defense?
Yes.
And we might not score a bunch of points, but we're going to be in every game because of our defense.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And now that's another reason why everything's in question now. To keep on this big picture train, and Jeff, I'm surprised. I know you're going to jump on this. Stumanji at Stumanji on Twitter, which is a great data-driven Twitter follow. All right. Matt Rhule, overall record so far. 19-18. Mm-hmm. Mike Riley overall in his 3 years at Nebraska, 19-19. Matt Rhule in the Big Ten, 10-17. Mike Riley in the Big Ten, 12-14. Matt Rhule, 2 bowl games. Mike Riley, 2 bowl games.
Oh,
I will say
Mike Riley two, Matt Rhule zero.
Oh, dear Lord.
Where are Riley's two? There was Michigan State in 2015.
Oh, there was another one. I saw somebody else on a team.
Yeah. Oh, dear Lord. So is it a coincidence that they have the same initials, guys? I'm just saying. Is it a coincidence that Mike Riley and Matt Rhule have the same initials?
Yeah, is it a coincidence? It is. I think it is a coincidence.
I don't think it is. If we're gonna call out the CFIC, I'm going to call out the college football gods at the same time. They have the same damn initials. Oh, my. I can't believe we didn't see this coming when we hired him. I can't believe we didn't see this coming, guys. They have the same initials. Never mind. Hold the plug. We got to get rid of him. Sorry, Matt. We got to let you go.
Yeah.
There's one other tweet I wanted to believe or I wanted to read. Here we go. James Prutch, P-R-U-C-H. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. They do the Through These Gates. They do some written content. Does the Day by Day podcast. I don't know, James. We haven't met him. We haven't had him on the show. I've always thought his contributions on Twitter, which can be a cesspool of humanity, are often very thoughtful and smart and whatever else. We've watched a little bit of their podcast. As we've said many times, it's really hard to watch or listen to anybody else's podcast when we're trying to get our episodes out. But generally speaking, like he's a thoughtful contributor to this ecosystem that we're all a part of, right? So he tweeted after the game, "Now that the regular season is over, I'll share. The results this year make me significantly doubt whether Matt Rhule is the right guy for Nebraska football. Wonderful culture builder, but the football is just not good enough. Not even close." Now, then he did a quote tweet on top of that. "I will always hope Rhule proves me wrong, but there's no more defending him. He has to do a lot to earn back the trust of fans now. This year was an absolute disaster with the strength of schedule and what was sold to fans in the offseason." Yeah. I think that's all fair. I think it's all accurate. Yeah. And I think it's why we say we've reached the kind of until further notice point with Matt Rhule and Nebraska football. Until further notice, we're not giving them the benefit of the doubt on anything. They got to prove they can fix the defense. They got to prove they can figure out what they want to be on offense. And it's got to be better.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%. Now fast forward to about February or March when we're talking about how great of an offseason we had and we're convincing ourselves that we're going to go 10-2.
You want to know what's funny, Matty-O, is the last week or so, and including today after the game, I was thinking to myself how much I'm going to be fully invested in December in January, the transfer portal and the coaching moves, and I'm going to get all excited about some defensive lineman I've never heard of from some school I've never heard of, who was all conference in a conference I've never heard of, who wants to come compete in the Big Ten. He's going to be the difference maker for
But seriously, I know I was pissed off leaving the stadium today, and me and thousands of other people, bared the cold and the elements. I got my two boys all bundled up. I bundled myself up and we go down there and it's hours out of our day to go and support these guys, and I'm sitting there and it's 40-16 and Harburg fumbles in the end zone. And my son, who never wants to leave before the clock hits zero, is like, "Let's go." And I'm like, "Yeah, let's go."
Yeah.
40-16. What are we doing? It's freezing. And I'm walking out and I'm thinking, remember that meme where it's like you're in reference to anybody who's just going through something and is being a total fool, putting the clown makeup on. It's me putting the clown makeup on, getting my Husker gear on before the game.
That's how it feels.
Like we've been duped every year. Like we feel like we've been bamboozled because we buy into all this stuff that the coaches and the media are saying going into the season. Oh, this team's different. We're tough up front where we can run the ball. We can throw the ball. We've got playmakers. And it's like, this sounds awesome. And then the games happen and we get a few in and like, oh, we are pretty good. And then we get into the Big Ten schedule and where it's tough. And people run the ball and people actually hit. And it's like, nothing's different.
Yep.
I don't think we took a step back this year. I think we're about the same as we were last year. And, but that's enough for me to be like, okay, now wait a second. Like, yeah, I'm going to keep putting my damn clown makeup on. I'm going down there and showing up, but I'm going to support anybody's that's wearing the red on that field. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean I have to like be a sunshine pumper. I'm a notorious sunshine pumper. Like, I'm done. Like, you are 100% right, General. Like, it is show me. It is prove it to me.
Yeah.
Because, and I was thinking about this too. We gave Scott Frost a fifth season he did not deserve. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, there is, even if it's 7-5 again next year, but we can tell if it looks different. We can tell. Schedule's tougher. 7-5 next year is different than 7-5 this year. They go 7-5 again. I know there's going to be people saying, oh, here we go again, but it's different. Okay. I just want them to show me that they're not going to get freaking pushed around. Okay. I cannot sit through another season of us not being able to stop the damn run. Like, that should be our calling card. You're not going to run on us. You're not going to run on Nebraska, because that was our calling card forever. Guys have been run out of town in the past for not being able to stop the run. You know, Kevin Cosgrove on line one, like it has happened. Even Bo Pelini, we get to the Big Ten and he can't stop the damn run.
Yeah.
That should be priority 1A in the offseason. We're going to stop the damn run, make him throw to beat us. Yes. How many teams we play this year are, if we stop the run, are going to be able to throw to beat us? How many? Not very many. Maybe Maiava. There's no stud quarterback gunslinger on this schedule that we had this year. Nobody's going to air it out and beat us, except for maybe him. So
I think
the load up and stop it.
I love it, Matteo. I love the passion. I think the frustrating thing too is we're not sitting here saying they should have been 11-1. Like, we're saying we want to see competitive football. We want to see them show up in Minneapolis.
We would have been thrilled with 8-0 to win today. Yes. 8-4. We would have been like, season was a success.
That Minnesota team is so average. Oh. So every other game they played, they continue to show their averageness.
Yep.
Right? So Minnesota, USC, there's no, we outplayed them for the vast majority of the game. Should have beat them. Find a way to win one of those games. Or today, I mean, today it's harder to like find a pathway where like we could have won. Yeah. But win one of those games. And we're 8-4 with a chance at a ninth win in a bowl game, and everybody's pretty dang happy. And we couldn't even do that. And it gets so old.
Well, I'll just say this. I'll say this. You're going to hate this. You said it hurts more because you feel like you're getting scammed, or you're getting sold something that you didn't buy into. What if Matt Rhule is just Mike Riley with just better public speaking skills? I'm just saying he's a salesman.
I'm gonna get into the car. I'm gonna drive to Lincoln, and I'm gonna break your legs.
Okay? Are you?
Don't you ever say that?
That's why it hurts more, right?
Are you insinuating that Matt Rhule could be a snake oil salesman? Jeff?
They've got the same initials.
It's been referenced on Twitter.
They've got the same. They've got the same initials.
Jeff, you brought this up, Jeff, before. Maybe he needs to rethink the stupid podcast.
Yeah, maybe that needs to go.
Exactly.
I think at the very least he needs to stop going on McAfee.
Kevin Kugler tweeted, at least we know Runza has an elite burger.
Ooh.
Kind of a like really sneaky jab.
Yeah, I know what you're saying too. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Who was it, guys? It was one of our high school friend group. I want to say it was the Thursday night before the Michigan game, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think I'm right here. It wasn't the night before, but it was like two nights before.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And they said that Rhule and his wife were at dinner at Wilderness Ridge and
Firethorn,
whatever. And Rhule is drinking a big martini. There's nothing wrong with a man going out to dinner. And GF and Lincoln loves martinis. There's nothing wrong with
martinis,
with a man.
Love me a good martini. They're delicious.
Let me tell you what we learned when we did our Tom Osborne series this summer. Tom Osborne was successful at a place like Nebraska. Like, maybe at USC, you can go out for martinis three times a week and it doesn't matter because the five-star recruits are just lining up. Right. Maybe at Ohio State, that's the case. What what you have to, like, if you really want to win at Nebraska, it needs to be all-consuming. And that's not fair. Like,
no, it's not.
Everybody
paid a lot of money.
Everybody wants work-life balance. Everybody wants to go to dinner with their wife and have a martini. There's nothing wrong with that. But Tom Osborne never went out to dinner with his wife. two nights before a big game. Tom Osborne didn't drink at all. Again, I'm not judging the martini part at all, but I just, that just, that, that stuck in my head all season long. Again, rule on paper, in theory, rules doing nothing wrong there, but
no,
literally Tom Osborne spent 16 to 20 hours a day in pursuit of winning championships and building champions at Nebraska. And it is harder. It's harder to do it at Nebraska than it is at other places. And that was true when we were really good, when it's still true. And so I'm not saying we want to fire Rule. I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. I think he needs to rethink some of this shit with his podcast and McAfee and all that stuff. And the other reason he needs to rethink it,
Bud Crawford fights. Remember that?
It just looks bad when you're, you know,
I know what he's doing. Like, we know what he's trying to do, right? He's trying to put Nebraska on the map, make it a cool place to go. He's trying to look cool. You know what else is cool? Winning.
Kicking ass.
Winning games.
That's what's cool.
Winning football games in the Big Ten Conference and maybe getting 9 or 10 wins and putting yourself in the sights of the College Football Playoff Committee. That's pretty cool, and it attracts people. So good luck with the podcast and Pat McAfee and all that. It's got to stop. Enough.
I mean, if he's smart, he's going to hit pause on that stuff for a while, at least.
Yeah.
Right. Like, let's hit pause for a few months.
Have a couple of good seasons and then go back to it. But right now, it's not working, dude.
We could go on. It's been an hour, guys. We go on for another hour. I want to end though with something. I started thinking about Kirk Ferentz and the stability that Iowa's had. And they've been, it strikes me that after 2014, we beat them in 2014. And they finished 2014 at 7-6. And that was Kirk Ferentz has reinvented himself a few times at Iowa, but that was the latest one where they're like, we're going to change our approach and do things a little bit differently. And then they had their 12-0 season in 2015.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Are you about to get a complimentary of Iowa football? Because I just want to know if I need to have my barf bag ready.
No, I'm not going to compliment them. Sorry, there's just chaos. There's a lot of family outside the door here. I'm sorry if you can hear all the background noise.
It's the holidays. But, no big deal.
That's right. So, yeah. I mean, so first of all, Ferentz took over in 1999. His first three teams went 1-10, 3-9, 7-5. Then he went 11-2, 10-3, 10-2. And in 02 and 04, they won conference titles. They split at least one of those, maybe both of them. So whatever. But point being, it took him three full years, two of which were losing seasons, to figure it out. And then he had some really good teams. And then when I thought of Iowa, I didn't pay that close of attention to Iowa before we came into the Big Ten. I just didn't. And I thought of them as a nice program that usually I would think they would be a winning team. Occasionally they'd be a really good team, never a great team. Like we said on the last episode, never a team that when you're scoreboard watching or you're talking about what the big boys did today and on a college football Saturday, you're not really checking Iowa.
Afterthought.
Yeah. And so after those three really good years, his records for the most part support that. I'm going to go 05 through 2014 really quickly. 7-5, 6-7, 6-6, 9-4, 11-2, then 8-5, 7-6, 4-8, 8-5, 7-6, right? And so any number of those seasons would have gotten you fired at Nebraska, right? Or any number of those stretches would have gotten you fired, right? And then my recollection, again, I don't remember all that went into it, but after 2014, when we beat them in overtime and they finished 7-6, was another one of those, we need to reevaluate things here at Iowa. And the famous Sean Eich course, we had to evaluate where Iowa was.
Yeah.
And so since then they've gone 12-2, 8-5, 8-5, 9-4, 10-3, 6-2 in the COVID season, 10-4, 8-5, 10-4, and 8-5.
One of the best records in college football, over the last 10 years.
Exactly. And going back to 2015, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those 10 years, they finished in the top 25. Now, I think that if I was an Iowa fan, I'd actually be really pissed off because they play elite defense and they have elite special teams. And that's what they've been doing since 2015. And you would say to yourself, if they had if they had a middling offense, average middle of the road offense, they'd probably be in the playoff or competing for the playoff most year. So I'd be really actually annoyed that but maybe that's part of it.
They don't think that way. They don't think that way.
And also, like, maybe the defense,
their brains aren't wired the same as us, TJ.
Maybe the defense wouldn't look as good if they didn't play this. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe the defense wouldn't look as good if, like, somebody, I think Sam or somebody had a stat about how many fewer plays a game the defense is on the field because of the way that they play. So that's certainly part of it.
Yeah.
The point, though, is, like, Nebraska fans want more than that. Nebraska fans want more than those records that I just reeled off. And we should, as I've said many times, we should never let go of that expectation. But the point is, like, Ferentz is a good example of a guy, like, there is an argument to be made that coaches can evolve. Those first three seasons at Iowa, two losing seasons, then 7-5. If that was at Nebraska, everyone would be like they are now, which is like, yeah. I don't know if this guy can figure it out. And then he went, again, 02, 03, and 04, he went 11-2, 10-3, 10-2. Like, yeah. He has reinvented himself many times. Now, what Nebraskans want is that 11-1, 10-2 every single year. You don't want the drop off after. But I guess the point is not to say that Kirk Ferentz is the end all be all, but he has shown a willingness to change multiple times for the better.
Yeah.
I think we need to give Rule an opportunity to do that.
And I think he might. Like, so far, he's shown us that he's willing to make those changes. Well, I mean, basically demoted one of his best friends to bring in Dana. You know, now the tricky one's going to be, okay, what do you do? Do you make a move on the O-line? I don't know. The O-line looked better the last few games. You know, do you make a move on D? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tricky, man.
Well, you said it. General used to say it. Matt Rhule will not stand pat. So maybe he'll make some adjustments. Who knows?
He's got to be as cold-blooded as... Yeah. As cold-blooded as old Kirk, the old hound dog, who, let's just remind everyone, let them fire his own son. Yeah. He let them fire his own son, Brian. His poor Brian.
Bring back Brian Ferentz. Bring back
poor Brian.
They're sick out there. They're disgusting.
How's Thanksgiving at the Ferentz family this year?
I can't believe you fired me, Dad. I can't believe you fired
Brian. Brian's off in Nevada or somewhere being OC and... Yeah, probably loving life.
One thing I will say, and I have to bring this up. You know what kind of teams win football games? Do you guys want to know, in my opinion? Warm football teams. Warm teams that have jackets that keep them warm on the sidelines. Oh, what did I tell you? It got cold today, and this is...
I didn't want to hear that anymore. I saw the warming jackets. Warming jacket. I'll bring it back for this. I saw the warming jackets.
I know you saw them. I know you did.
Yeah. You know what I thought of them?
They ratty. Awesome. Oh, for the love of God.
No, they
we're freezing
good.
Out there. They the players good. Are freezing.
I want to make one point. And again, we could hold on to our grievance and probably talk for hours, but we're well over time. Well, we don't have a limit here, but I want to make one other point. Like, when we went to Minnesota, not only did we not show up, those guys are frothing at the mouth to beat Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
Iowa, every season is frothing at the mouth to beat Nebraska. And look, I mean, like a guy like Matt Rhule and all the coaching, like all these guys, coaching is not a fun profession until you've really established yourself. They're always on the move. They're always turnovers and firings and different things. These guys want to win more than anybody. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it feels like we're missing something where if you're a Cornhusker, you should want to not only beat them, you should want them to feel so much pain.
Yeah.
You have a 10-0 lead at halftime in 2024 at Iowa. You should want to go out and embarrass them in front of their home crowd and score put up 30 more and not let them score a single point. And we've been lacking that sort of mindset and that killer
mamba
instinct.
Mentality.
And that killer instinct. Yeah. The mamba mentality.
For a long time. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
True. It's really annoying that we're just like, I don't know. It's a long time to the bowl game. I don't even know. Like, you know, we're going to finish with the winning record now for the second season in a row. Of course, I'm going to want us to win the bowl game. I think that would help Rhule going into the offseason. But the way these last two games went, I'm not sure how much a bowl game win helps him, depending on who we play.
Yeah.
Maybe if it's a better SEC team or something, we somehow beat them.
The amount of points.
No, but it's the old song and dance, the old coach's song and dance of, you know how important these practices are for development and all that? And they are. I mean, they are. We might, I was trying to get excited about it earlier, telling my wife and kids about, you know, we might get to see some younger guys that maybe get some playing time in the bowl game. They might be better than the older guys. You know, we don't know. So there's fun elements of it. And we'll have all this off-season stuff to talk about. But it just sucks. Like, thank God we have the bowl game, silver lining. Like, we're done after today. But it just sucks that, like, 12 games have gone by so fast, and it's not what we wanted. Jeff, you owe me $50, by the way. We didn't.
Oh, that's right. I do owe you $50.
We're seven and a half win total. We did not hit it.
Does the bowl game count? Does the bowl game count?
No, it does not. It does
not.
Son
of a. That's a
stupid bet. Who talked us into that bet?
Did you? Did you bring it? You brought us into your web of gambling, didn't you? If I
there's no web, there's no web. This is America. This is America.
Matt, when I drive to Lincoln to break Jeff's legs, I will get your $50.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, TJ.
Well, it was a sour ending to this. Like you said, we were clamoring every year to get to football season. It goes by way too fast. And it really sucks the way that this ended because, I mean, I can't remember. We've given up a shit ton of points in the last two games. And our record in November is just
77.
Oh, for the love of God. And our record in November is just absolute ass. It sucks, but it's college football. I wouldn't have it any other way. It's something to watch. It's something to do. It's something we love to talk about. So didn't end up the way we wanted it to, but hell, we got next year, right, guys? We got next year, right?
This is the life we've chosen.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
And there are no guarantees, except none of us will see heaven. Sorry, that's from what's the movie with Paul Newman and Tom Hanks, the Irish mobster movie, Road to Perdition. To Perdition. Sorry,
I never seen it.
Sorry. Yeah, so we're all.
Audience hasn't either, Jeff.
I think you guys are going to go. I think you guys are going to go to heaven. Sorry, I think we're all going to go to
heaven.
Thanks,
Gage. Appreciate that.
It's. I mean, it's just. I feel like a bowl game win. And people are like, great, but I'm, you know, maybe a month from now, it helps to springboard us into the offseason.
Eight and five looks better than 7-6.
A bowl game loss, though.
That's what I'm saying.
People like the narrative that everything we're talking about continues with the bowl game loss.
You can hype some people up for some offseason excitement with a bowl game win. I don't care who it's against. They need to win. And does a loss mean as much? No, but like a win does.
How to me. Good Lord, you guys. Think about that too. How quickly do we, I'm going to be honest about this and I'll even take accountability here. How quickly do we forget that we just wanted to get to a bowl game for so long? And already we're dismissing the bowl game this year. It doesn't, we don't care
dismissing.
About it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This isn't good enough.
No, it's right. Not that.
I'm just angry, Jeff. I'm angry on a Friday.
I know.
On a Black Friday night.
How quickly we forget.
No, you're
that's
right.
That's all I'm saying.
No, that's fair.
All I'm saying.
2 years in a row, bowl game.
Well, that's what I guess that was
the first time in 10, 11 years.
We have to give Rule credit for that. But like, I think that sums up everything we've talked about today, where we got to give him a little more leeway because he took over a
low incremental
a program in really bad shape. Yeah.
Now,
and so we like, that's true. And we need like another more firing, another turnover is not what the program needs. The big question now that may not even be answered in 2026 with the schedule being as rough as it is. The big question now is, can he elevate to that next level? Can we get to 8 to 10 wins a year? Instead of 7, I mean, I was going to say 7-9, but we haven't even gotten to 8 or 9. So can he get to 8 to 10 wins a year? And when, you know, those seasons when you're at 10, 11 wins, you're competing for the playoff. I think if Husker fans felt like that was in the relatively near future, the occasional 10 or 11 win season, we would put up with seasons like this, or we would understand that next season is going to be rough. It's, again, like you said, Mattio, you never know. Maybe we win all the games we should win and pick off a couple games we're not supposed to, and we're 9-3, and suddenly everyone's euphoric. Like, you don't know. Nobody knows. There's a reason you play the games. But right now, it is fair to question everything.
Absolutely.
Trust no one.
Trust no one. That includes the guy behind the podium that's a good public speaker that has the same record as Mike Riley. That's all I'm saying. No. Same initials.
All right, Common fans. Was it the Counting Crows who had the song Long December?
Yes.
It's going to be a long December until we get to our bowl game. Now everyone go listen to Long December. But I actually always really like that song. Is that lame?
There was a good cover I just heard recently. It was a newer artist. MJ Lenderman, I think, is the kid's name. Very stripped down acoustic version that was, I thought, was haunting and beautiful.
Will you send that to me? Will you find that?
I'm going to see. Yeah, I think I can find it.
You got music aficionados. Give me my 90s gangster rap and I'm good. All right. That's all I need.
It's a long December and there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last.
May.
But is there? But is there reason to believe that?
I don't know.
It's going to be a cold, dark winter.
Going back to PJ and the voicemail on Wedding Crashers.
Whatever.
That's you, TJ. Again, to go full circle. That's you.
You're like, hey, you've reached TJ.
Whatever.
And I'm not just picking on love because I'm not sure friendship exists either. Oh my God. All right, guys. Well, we'll be back at you sometime in this cold, dark abyss that is December. Nebraska loses 40-16. The Common Fans are questioning the meaning of life. I guess we'll end on this. Go spend the rest of the weekend with your families and think about what you're thankful for, because right now it sure as shit isn't Nebraska football.
Yeah, that's true.
But no, just kidding. We love you all, and we love you Huskers too. Keep fighting the good fight. Hey, Common Fans, be kind to each other. We'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles.
And Nebraska takes the lead. And the national championship is Nebraska's.